You're listening to The Big Show with George Russick and Matty Rose on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hour number three. It's The Big Show, Russick and Rose. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, powered by MortgagesToGo.ca. Always the lowest interest rates in Canada since 2004. Visit MortgagesToGo.ca. Bottom of the hour, or lock of the day, courtesy of Metal Supermarkets Calgary. But more importantly, Olympic champion Donovan Bailey in studio coming up at 8:30. Actually, the biggest thing is intern Gregor is going to have his Paris hype 30 seconds to get Maddie excited for the Paris 2024 Games, which is exactly 87 days away. He has a 30-second feature coming up.
Crosby days away.
Yes. But right now, to talk about your Calgary Flames and the Wranglers. You hear him on Sportsnet today. You read him on The Athletic, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Breakfast Hotline. Our man, Julian McKenzie. J-Mac, what's up, my man?
What it do, baby?
We're jacked up for Donovan Bailey. Now,
I could tell. I would be too.
I read this earlier on. Do you know when he won the 96, where he broke the world record? Do you know he hit a top speed of 43.6 kilometers an hour?
I did not know that he hit that exact speed, actually.
It was the fastest recorded speed ever by a human being at the time.
And what's funny about it is that I remember interviewing him about that race in 96, and he says that, like, his start was wrong. Like, he was able to tell me everything about how he was getting off the blocks and how he wasn't in the, you can hear him tell you about it, but, like, he said his start wasn't wrong, was right. His start was not right in that race, and he still won. And it's one of the most enduring moments in Canadian Olympic history. I would be hyped up for Donovan Bailey as well.
Yeah. We're super excited. He's going to join us in studio. This run by the Wranglers so far, obviously, impressive, upset in round one. How good has Dustin Wolf been so far?
I mean, you want Dustin Wolf to look as good as he's been so far. I mean, a lot of people are going to think of that game one against Tucson, but it's really good to see for his development anyway, that he was able to pull off a shutout win the way that he did. Look, a lot of this run, this could be the final time Dustin Wolf plays AHL games, depending on what the Flames end up doing this offseason heading into next year. So the fact that he's able to get these wins in, the fact that he's able to get that time in and look as confident and comfortable as he's looked so far, that's really good for him, obviously. And Ryan Husk has said it before, and it's not a complete surprise, but if you're not going to be playing NHL playoff games, AHL playoff games are the next best thing in simulating what you want to see for your players in those tough situations before they reach the next level. I think Dustin Wolf, it's only really two games, but he's looked really good for this team so far.
Who have you liked as far as skaters? They win the first game by a shutout and 46 saves. It was Dustin Wolf who was kind of the star of the show, but a little bit more of an offensive game in game two. Who's kind of stood out for the skaters for you?
Well, one guy I think I'm sure you feel the same way too, Matty Rose, but it looks like William Strongren is starting to turn himself into a player, a guy who needed that time to adjust to North American ice, and he gets himself that really sweet goal late in the third period of that game. I'm sure you guys have seen the replays of it already. And yeah, maybe the defense may have overcommitted a little bit and gave him too much space, but the fact that William Strongren was able to hit the hole with some pace, get himself a nice goal in front, like, that's a really good play. And I know a lot of people in this market are maybe still pulling their hair out about the pick because Logan Stankoven came after him and he's playing Stanley Cup playoff games now. And a lot of people are going to rave over the Dallas Stars and their scouting. But I think there needs to be a bit more patience with William Strongren. He has the size. He clearly has some ability. Just need to see more out of him in more games. Maybe the playoff run changes a few people's minds, but I think the fact that he's been able to stand out like he has in the series, especially with that goal in game two, I think that helps him in the future. So I'll definitely put him up there. Sam Morton, I'm really intrigued about, man. Like, he managed to get 5 goals in the regular season. He played in the CCHA. I wonder if they were trying to think maybe there's some Walker Duehr in him, kind of that same vibe. But, like, the fact that he was able to get a goal in game two, that also is a big standout for me. You obviously want to see guys like Jacques Pelletier stand out in this playoff run as well. There's more games for that too. But I think just in terms of guys who we might not normally focus on, guys like Sam Morton and William Strongren are going to be my picks for this one.
I'm fascinated to see what happens at home, what type of crowds we get at home as well, as this team looks to take on the Coachella Valley Firebirds, the first seeded team here with the or for the second round. How are you teeing up this series? What do you need to see from the Wranglers? Because I also wonder at what point you're like, hey, okay, they're actually gaining something from this run. Because frankly, when you look at just a three-game series like they have with Tucson, I don't know how much you can take from it. But if you can go on a little bit of a run here, all of a sudden we're getting into a conversation.
I agree, but like the fact that those guys won both of those games in Tucson, and I think in Tucson had a bunch of NHL players come down too. Like, there's definitely something you can take from that. To your point, yes, you want them to go on a run. You want them to play more playoff games. But, I mean, even if it was only two games against Tucson, like, I think those could go a long way for some of those players' development. In terms of what you want from this series, I mean, the fact that the Wranglers have the first two games at home, you obviously want to see your best players stand out. You obviously want to see Dustin Wolf continue to play well, continue to be confident. It's really him. Like, he's obviously, we all know he's the big prospect in the stable, and he's closer to getting more NHL time. You want him to stand. Ultimately, if he's not the guy, the Wranglers are in trouble. But he's so confident. He's done everything that he's done at the AHL level. I expect him to dominate in this series. I think that should be the expectation for him. At this level, he's had that time in the NHL. He's acclimatized himself to what's been going on at the AHL level through the last quarter of the NHL season. Now he's in the AHL. That mindset should be, I mean, a lot different from what we've normally expected from him. He should be a lot better. He should be dominant. He should be going into those games knowing that he's faced tougher shooters at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. So I expect him to play well, and I expect some of their better players up front too to show out as well. I'm really looking at Dustin Wolf. I think he's the guy to focus on.
Yes, sir, without a doubt. This line of Schwint, Coronado, and Pelletier was fun to watch, eh?
Yeah, I think, again, you want your younger players to develop and you want them to stand out. I think for a guy like Matthew Coronado and everything that we've seen from this year, I can understand that some guys may not have the expectations were a little disappointing. I can understand that. A lot of people looked at him in preseason and thought that he was going to stand out and be an NHL player. He clearly needs a little bit more seasoning. Pelletier, I think he's still just getting through everything he went through after he re-aggravated that shoulder injury. So to see those two offensive players on the line together, seeing them try to get some chances, seeing them work well, I think that's a good situation for them at the AHL level. They could still come back next year, get an opportunity to crack the lineup, get more playing time at the pro level under their belt. I think that's fine for them. For Cole Schwint, I'll say this, like, for people wondering about his future, like, he gets the fact that he's probably going to be more of a defensive center going forward. If he plays more games at the NHL level, it's going to be in a bottom six role. But I think the fact that he understands that, that's in his head, that's good for him going forward. You're not looking at a situation where a player thinks he's better suited in the top part of the lineup. I think for this Flames team, where we saw how what it was like for them in the fourth line this year and how they were trying to find the right combination of guys. I know Schwint got a little taste during the regular season, but I think Schwint, if he continues to develop that defensive side of his game, maybe he gets more NHL games next year. So to see all three of those players and the skill set that they have and what they're able to do at the AHL level, and they've each gotten a taste of the NHL life for a little bit, getting that seasoning together, playing in the AHL playoffs, that's also going to help them too.
Julian McKenzie covers the Flames for The Athletic. You hear him on Sportsnet today, right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan joining us here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Big Show, Russick and Rose, 960 The Fan. Who had the most surprising quotes during locker cleanout day for you?
It's a good question. It wasn't so much. Okay. It wasn't so much one person having the surprising quotes for me. It's just the fact that if you listen to the players, they all want to win now. They do not want to be in a situation that they were in at locker cleanout where they were talking about not making the playoffs and having a top 10 pick. And then you have Craig Conroy saying, well, this might take some time. And we'd like to follow the Dallas Stars model where you're drafting really well. You're adding you're adding pieces to your extensive contracts. And
just,
you
just
can still
literally hit on every draft pick and their impact players. That's all you got to do.
Like, this is just my view. I think there's a bit of a disconnect. And I think that for guys on this team who think that they're likely to be competitive or be a playoff team as soon as next year, I question how realistic that is, especially when you have no idea if the number one goaltender on your team is going to come back. He has the no movement clause, but I still would be very surprised if he wanted back on this team, considering where they're at, considering how the end of the year went. And I'll add this too. I've seen a couple people look at Jacob Markstrom and say that, you know, he should get over his feelings about everything and he shouldn't have it, you know, the way that he's speaking about it. It's not a good look for him. He's a human being at the end of the day. I understand he makes millions of dollars. He makes more money than any of us will make in our lifetimes. But he's a human being at the end of the day. He has a family. He even mentioned that he was trying to get back to Sweden to be with his family. He hasn't been around his son much. Like, I think for him, considering how things have gone, like I can hold a little bit of sympathy for him in all of that. You lose out on some teammates, especially a guy like Chris Tanev, who shared a locker room with for over a decade, and now he's no longer on your team. Look, it's on him to play well. It's on him to be the guy. But I wish that a few people just had a little bit more sympathy for him in this situation. But at the same time, I get it. Asking for sympathy for millionaires, that's not going to fly with us regular common folk. But I don't know. I try to see both sides of certain situations. But all that to say, and to put that rant aside, if Jacob Markstrom doesn't come back on this team, yeah, I know Dustin Wolf will benefit from that. Do you see this team as a playoff team if he's not there, considering the season that he had, considering the goaltending that's there? I don't know. Like, I just think overall there seems to be a bit of a disconnect from what the players want. And yeah, they should obviously want to win. They should obviously want to make the playoffs. But if you think this roster is going to do it as soon as, what, next year, I'm not even confident that this team's going to be really good in time for the new building. Like, I think that they need more high-impact players, especially on the younger side. I think Craig Conroy is going to have to make some really tough decisions this offseason and next before we could even really think about that. And I just think the timeline for this team to be really good might take a lot longer than what some of those players want.
Do you think they'll be active in free agency?
I could see them getting guys who are on short-term deals. I don't see them making the big splash. I mean, a couple people are looking at the centers and wondering, hey, could Sean Monahan come back? If Elias Lindholm becomes a free agent, what do you do there? Like, I could see them trying to find some guys on shorter-term deals.
Julian, Elias Lindholm's not coming back, man. There's no way that guy's coming back.
Whoa. I'm not saying he's coming back.
Right.
I'm not saying he's coming back. I'm saying there are people who are wondering, like, oh, like, maybe the Flames do bring someone back, or, hey, maybe they go big game hunting, and you look at the quality of players who are out there. Like, no. I'm not saying that. Like, I'm not even confident about Sean Monahan coming back. But I think if they find some other guys who could take a roster spot for maybe a season or two, and you try to bet on some of those guys.
Here's what I would like to see happen. I would like to see the Flames look at a roster, look at a guy who, a young player, whether they're between 18, 23, and say, all right, we want him, and we're going to flip an asset for him. I'm just throwing out an example here. Like a Cole Perfetti in Winnipeg, who has been in and out of the lineup in the playoffs. That's a young player who could probably benefit from more time in a lineup. Why not take a chance on him? Find guys on teams around the league who could benefit from more playing time, more opportunity, and take a bet on them. Craig Conroy said himself, like, Montreal has done some of those trades. They landed Kirby Dach, was like a top pick in his draft year, and the faceoffs weren't good. He had the wrist injury that bothered him. They managed to swing a deal at the draft, and yeah, he got hurt, but that's a guy who's probably going to be a part of their top six future. They also got Alex Newhook, who can go up and down their lineup, but he's probably going to be a third-line center for this team. it's young players like that. You have to kind of look around, do your scouting, and make a move for these types of players. I would like to see the Flames acquire a young player, take a bet on him, and go up from there. It doesn't have to be a Cole Perfetti. Like, you could aim higher and see if you could find another player who fits that bill. Like a Marco Rossi in Minnesota. It seems like he could be on the move over there. I know he's small. This is a guy who got a little over 20 goals this year. Maybe he's a Calder Trophy candidate. He might just miss. But that might be the type of player you want to bring on this team. I would like to see the Flames try to make a move in that area.
Do you think this is a team that's going to be active around the draft? Like, obviously, they went through this season. They traded a whole bunch of pieces away. Do you think that they could maybe even kind of show their cards as to the direction that they plan on taking the group by making some more deals at the draft?
I think it's possible. I think for what I was suggesting, that probably maybe you move that first round pick to make it work, depending on the type of player you want to bring in. I think if the Flames come away from that draft having used their first round pick in the top 10, but that second first round pick gets flipped for a roster player who can help in this retool era, are people going to be that upset? And look, maybe you use some of those other picks for other deals as well. I could see them being active. I mean, you obviously need other dance partners to make that work. But I think if you're trying to make this retool a quick one, I think what ends up happening is that you make some kind of move to get players who can help you in the now. One of those moves where you acquire a guy who was a first-round pick a couple years ago, and he's playing now, and you could put him in your lineup in the middle or in the top or whatever. Like, that stuff like that helps your retool. If you're just using all your draft picks, like, the players on the Flames will tell you, like, it's great that you have those draft picks, but, like, you want guys who can help you now. And there's an opportunity with the draft pick capital they've amassed over the last how many months where maybe they put something together to get a guy who can help them right now. I don't think it's out of the question that they make moves around the draft. You just need someone to make those moves. That's what held them out of trading with anyone in the first round last year.
It's going to be super fascinating, Julian. It all starts with the draft lottery coming up in just over a week. Where
I can't wait.
Flames fans, do whatever you do. You know, fingers crossed. Put on your lucky pants. I don't know. Lucky hat. Maybe go buy an Oilers donut at a Calgary donut shop, which is absolutely absurd and blasphemy. Yeah, they're selling Oilers donuts in Calgary.
Why? Why would they do that?
Exactly.
It's just a stupid thing to do.
Exactly.
This is like, I mean, I don't know. It's not the same thing, but like, I don't know. I remember last year when the arena was being announced and Daniel Smith was there wearing like a Flames jersey, but you're saying go Oilers. Don Maloney's booing from the crowd. I know it's not exactly the same thing, but like, you can't just have like,
yeah,
like it's not, I don't know, man. Like, okay. Canada's team is not thin. All right. You're not going to get people in Calgary. You're not going to get people in Vancouver.
No.
Being all like, let's go Oilers.
No.
You know, if it were like, no, that's not going to happen.
It's anybody but the Oilers. Yeah. That's how it is.
Could you, like, if it's Edmonton, Toronto, I know Toronto's probably going to lose their series. But do you realize if it ended up being that those two teams in the Stanley Cup final, like, everyone in this country would lose? You'd have to stay in hiding. You'd have to live in bunkers for like a whole 2 weeks.
I'd start watching the NBA final.
Outside.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be watching the NBA final anyway? That's weird.
Probably not. We'll see. Depends on what night it is.
But you know what? Maddie's going to get jacked up for the Olympics. Because we got our intern Gregor with an Olympic preview here to get Maddie excited for the Paris Games, which is 87 days away.
Okay, well, Gregor, knock him dead.
All right, Julian, great stuff as usual. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, guys. Peace.
Julian McKenzie covers The Athletic. You hear him on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, courtesy of Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar. Guest hotline. Donovan Bailey, Olympic champion, coming up right now, though. Gregor, our intern, because that's what we do on this show. We throw interns on the air. Yeah. Where else do you get that opportunity? You think he's got a chance to be on Pat's show? Hell to the no.
Not chaotic enough. That show's too done up.
Yeah, it runs like a tight ship.
Mm-hmm.
Our show.
Yeah, thanks, George. We have some exciting news.
Yeah, our show janky as hell.
Yeah, chaos. Embrace it.
That's why you're allowed to jump on the air if you're an intern. I'm like, sure, George will throw you on the air.
Patrick's allowed to curse like twice a week.
He loves an S-bomb. So, Gregor, our intern, is joining us to get Maddie hyped for the Olympics. Because Maddie's like, I don't really care about the Olympics. But yesterday we talked about Olympic basketball. Maddie's like, all right, I know it's going to be a good tournament. I'm looking forward to that. Gregor, are you ready for today's edition?
Oh, yeah, I got a good one for Maddie.
Oh, whoa. Okay, well.
Wow. High bar.
Let me give you a little advice.
Especially for our show.
Yeah, let me give you a little advice.
All right, let's hear it.
Under promise, over deliver.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's not that good, actually.
Okay, okay. Right. Looking forward to
good
it
job.
Now.
You have exactly 30 seconds. GVP, right. Begin the music now.
Mm-hmm.
For the Paris Olympics, we get the opportunity to see new sports coming in. And I'm not just talking regular sports. I'm talking rad sports.
Oh.
This year, we get to experience the second time since Tokyo 2020, skateboarding and surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing athletes hang in 10, shredding pavement. How would you not want to tune into that? This is combined with the first time we'll see breakdancing. All these sports in one place, this could be the most fun Olympics we've seen in our lifetime.
Oh, again,
he was really close there.
We said 30 seconds.
He was close. He just lifetime, he got to the M, and I think they cut off the E.
Yep.
Go to Toronto to review that. I think that was good.
Nope. You ran out of time. It has to be a tight 30 seconds. It's like you're doing an Olympic update for the national network.
So far, 30 seconds. 2 for 2. I will say.
He got you hyped up.
These are some things that I am excited about. Like watching some of the track stuff that they did with the skateboard was pretty cool.
You going to watch some ollies?
I'm probably not going to watch a lot of surfing because I don't really know how to judge surfing. You know, I was thinking about this after our conversation yesterday, and I'm trying to figure out why the Olympics don't get me as excited as some of the other sports.
Mm.
I think that part of it is the individual take turns aspect of it. Where not everything is kind of happening all at once. It's like, okay, one guy goes, and then we wait. And then one guy goes, and then we wait. And then one guy goes that we all know is not going to be in contention, so it's really just a waste of time and a chance to take a pee. And then another guy goes.
Mm.
And then another guy, but he's not. So there isn't the consistent build of excitement for me. You know, when you get to the final rounds and it's down to 1v1s and stuff like that, like the basketball tournament.
Sure.
I can get involved. But I think that's part of it.
Okay.
Where it just doesn't have the same momentous hype for me.
We're going to get two of them tomorrow.
Okay.
So Gregor and intern Grace, who we're going to meet tomorrow, are both going to have a 30-second update.
Excellent.
To get you hyped up for the Paris Olympics.
Looking forward to it.
Straight
Let's make
ahead,
sure Grace knows what we've already done as well.
We hope Olympic champion Donovan Bailey will be joining us in studio. He's not here yet.
No, not yet.
It's fine. There's still time. And also our lock of the day. We'll do that next. Big Show, Russick and Rowe, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. It's a Big Show, Russick and Rowe, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, powered by MortgagesToGo.ca. Always the lowest interest rates in Canada since 2004. Visit MortgagesToGo.ca. Let's quickly do the lock of the day before we talk to Donovan Bailey.
Yep.
And it's brought to you by Metal Supermarkets Calgary, offering a large variety of metal types and shapes, cut to any size and ready fast. Metal Supermarkets Calgary, the convenience store for metal, located on 50th Avenue Southeast. I'm going UEFA Champions League today. Leg one of the semifinal. Real Madrid, Barcelona. Bayern Munich. I am taking the over 3.5 goals. Big plus money. Lots of goals today. I'm taking the over.
4 hockey games tonight. I'm going to get the dynamite out and call the end of the season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm going to take Brad Marchand over 1.5, and I'm going to take Mitch Marner under 0.5 points.
All right, there you go. There's our lock of the day, brought to you by Metal Supermarkets Calgary, offering a large variety of metal types and shapes, cuts any size and ready fast. Metal Supermarkets Calgary, the convenience store for metal, located on 50th Avenue Southeast.
You want to get GVP's lock of the day as well? And then we'll get this fixed up.
Donovan Bailey
Doing a little work here. Okay.
Yeah, he's here.
Figured I was going to do it. I could help. And then
Olympic champion Donovan Bailey joining us in studio. Thank you for coming by, sir.
Morning. Man, I didn't think that you guys in Calgary had some of these Toronto traffic issues, man.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Do you like the snow this morning?
Well, I brought some sunshine, and all of a sudden, is this my excuse for you guys to say to get out of the town? Because there was sunshine for the past couple of days I've been here. But yeah, you know what? It's actually not bad. It's not bad. The weather is still relatively warm. So
yeah,
I'm all right.
We appreciate you coming in. You were in Calgary today for the Champion Chats at the Hyatt Regency Calgary, which is an annual fundraising luncheon supporting classroom champions. Tell us about why you're here.
Well, you just told
us. I did.
Steve Messler is a very good friend of mine and Olympic champion. He's built an incredible business supporting kids in the classroom. I am always, an ambassador. I mean, I'm probably one of the non-paid ambassadors that travels the world, and ultimately I'm here to support him. Classroom Champions is an incredible organization, and myself, Wanique Hornmiller, Luke Wilson, a few other athletes are always come to support him.
Well, let's get into it. We're fascinated that you're here in town. There's so much that we can ask you about going all the way back. Of course, you got the book out as well, the autobiography. Right. What was the process like to write that and kind of get it out on shelves here?
Well, yes, my book Undisputed is out everywhere books are sold right now. The hardest thing I ever committed to, man.
Really?
Absolutely. Really? Absolutely.
Not being the fastest man in the world, writing a book was harder.
You know, I think that I don't know how blessed I was with writing. You know what I mean? But I know I was blessed with speed. But yeah, the process of writing was pretty tedious. But to write something to remember events, so specific years and years ago. I mean, we can talk about if you see something on film, for instance,
right?
That's always good, and you can always reminisce and look at things like that. But to remember and write details, it was tough, but it's awesome. I mean, the book is doing quite well, and funny that you asked me about the book because I think I'm gonna write another one. I mean,
really?
I think, yeah. Well, now obviously I've challenged myself.
Mm-hmm.
So now because I've challenged myself, and it's doing okay, I'm like, okay, let's see how this is gonna go for a year or two, and then maybe we'll jump in and we'll jump in and do another one.
Obviously, many accomplishments throughout your life, but where does that kind of rank as far as getting that book out and seeing the reaction to it from your fans and just people who maybe didn't even learned a lot about you?
Right. I've always set really lofty goals. My belief is that there's nothing in the world that I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how I lived my athletic career. And that's really what I've said for the book also. So for me, I try to encourage people that there should be no limits. I mean, so ultimately I have to live by example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's Olympic champion Donovan Bailey joining us here in studio. It's the Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. At what age did you know you were fast? Because that always fascinates me. At what age were you just kicking the ass of kids your age at the schoolyard? When did you realize you were fast, Donovan?
Probably when I was 5.
Wow.
Probably
okay.
5, 6. No, but I'm just saying to you
yeah.
that. No, but it's not. Okay. Okay, let me qualify that.
Sure.
I think that I knew that I had a special gift when I was 5 because I was probably the most physically gifted athlete in whatever I was doing. So if I was playing soccer,
mm-hmm.
I was faster than other kids. I could jump higher, and so you saw that that was special. When I actually realized I was gifted enough to be greater,
mm-hmm.
Was probably in my teenage years when I started winning and running times with very little effort and no training.
How close were you not to being a sprinter?
Oh, very close. Wow. That's a great question, actually. I was in business. I didn't even think about it. I took speed or my physical tools and gifts for granted. I did not, in all the years growing up, I I love basketball. So mm-hmm. for some reason, I thought I was gonna be about pro basketball player, 6'2", power forward. Yeah, yeah, right, right, yeah, right, right, right. It's still in my head too, and I'm an old man. But I'm saying to you that I thought business. So if I wasn't gonna be a basketball player, and I knew that early, mm-hmm. by the way, so, I wasn't living a dream with that. I knew that I was never going to be a professional basketball player, but I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to be business or a lawyer, maybe,
mm-hmm.
yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was quite close. I mean, I think that at the time that I decided that Well, first of all, I'd met Dan Paff, who was at Louisiana State University at the time.
Yeah.
I was on our national team. So I'd made the national team with no training. Right. So So when I got to meet him, and he basically said, "Hey man, listen, you know, when you want to take this seriously, just come down and see me."
Okay, so I watched a documentary on your life and your journey to winning the gold medal, and it was fantastic. What were you doing in Japan before you really got serious before the Olympics?
I've been injured many times.
Yeah,
because I think that's part. I had major injuries. So I started in track, part time in track and field, mm-hmm. in 1991, and I was injured. I had a major injury every year because you don't.
How frustrating was that?
Well, it was very frustrating, but it was 100% my fault. Mm. I mean, you can't just show up and go, "Oh, I'm going to run fast." I mean, your body's going to break down, your muscles are going to tear because you're not trained.
Right. Bunch of beer league softball players would beg to differ, but yeah.
No, but I'm saying to you that, that's why it resonates with me when a lot, like weekend warrior guys.
Yeah.
Because they think that because they, on a weekend, they go to the office or they go have a beer with the fellas, and they can go and they think that they have, like, I guess if you get one of those guys, what I'm saying to you, if you get one of those guys to come in here, they're like, "Oh yeah, I can play in the NHL." Right?
Right.
I skate circles around the boys.
Right.
So I had the same attitude with track. I did not train. But I mean, I was playing basketball quite a bit. So that was my training.
Sure.
So I was in great shape. So I wasn't just sitting on the couch. But I would get hurt every year because every single time you get faster and you're with faster people, yeah, something's gonna happen. Yeah, you can't just show up. So, learning discipline. When I moved to Calgary in 1992, by the way, to try out for the bobsled team, what that helped me do was to put me in an environment of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And this town. That's why I'm always I got great friends here, and I'm always thankful because this is a town that kind of helped me to get to the place where I was the fastest man in history.
Right.
Because of being an environment at COP, being an environment where nutrition, sleep, weights.
Yeah.
Like, right. I understood that. Yeah.
Who were your idols when you were kind of growing up and realizing that this was something that you wanted to pursue? Who were the people that you kind of looked up to, whether they were athletes or anybody else like that?
Well, I mean, I think that it's widely known that I'm a basketball fan and I'm a huge boxing fan.
Okay.
So the two people that you know, obviously I look at who I wanted to emulate, you know, if I ever or when I got to where they're at, definitely was Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to meet either of them?
I met them both, man.
Oh, yeah?
I met them both.
What were those experiences like?
I was a child, literally. I physically was not a child, but I met Muhammad Ali at the Olympics. He lit the flame there. And I met Michael in Chicago. I mean, but again, phenomenal.
Right.
And I met them as Donovan Bailey, Olympic champion, world record holder.
Sure.
You know, and so the minutes that I got to spend with both of those people have been phenomenal.
That's incredible. Dan Paff, your coach from LSU, he said the night before your race, he knew you're going to break the world record. Did you know that? Take me through the night before you became the fastest man in the world. You broke the world record. You ran 9.84 in Atlanta. You stuck it to all the Americans. We were so damn proud of you. But tell me the night before, what was going through your head? Like, what did you sleep well? Did you not sleep well? Were you uber confident? Like, what was that night before your race?
So here's what happens with me in every major championship. If I'm going into, like, the Olympics is coming up, you know, so if I were an athlete running in Paris, here's what would happen. I'm extremely nervous before my first race. So when I was competing, there was four rounds, right? You have the heats.
Yep.
And obviously you have to qualify. So you have the heats,
sure.
Quarterfinals, mm-hmm. and then the next day, semifinals and finals, which is about an hour and a half apart. So every major championships, I'm uber nervous before the heats. Mm-hmm. So I cannot sleep the night before my first race.
Mm. Okay.
Right? And so, because I'm always just very anxious, just fidgety, just like, okay.
Ready, you know, to go.
Like, it's like an engine, like purring. Yes.
Yeah.
then I get the one race out of the way, usually. And then the quarterfinals, usually, you know, like you make it very, I have to be technically sound for that because you're a little exhausted because of, so it's all adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little exhausted from obviously not sleeping the night before. But the night before finals, I always sleep 12 hours. So I'll get therapy. I eat a nice big meal, you know, great massage, and I go to sleep.
Right.
And then I wake up the next day and I'm like, okay. And it's I'm smiling and calm, and it's because today's war. So it is, man. And so I am probably the most focused ever. And it's not an adrenaline thing that you have to be in sprinting, you have to be focused for 10 seconds, right? And adrenaline's a hell of a thing. Imagine if you're hyped up for a whole day. You're gonna be exhausted physically, yeah. Mentally, and psychologically. So on race day, I'm always calm. Yeah. So that's what I mean. So before the night before, it was obviously a different time because I went to bed. I did all the things I just said, but then when I woke up the next morning, that's the night that the bombing occurred in Atlanta.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Of course.
So what happened with that? I thought Dan was joking. I'm like, this guy's trying to get in my kitchen. He's mm-hmm. trying to figure out if I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, no. And he walked over and he put the TV on. I was just eating breakfast. And I'm like, oh, no. So then, of course, attitude.
Sure.
Focus had to shift. You know, was there a problem? Did people die? And were they going to cancel the games?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Major. So I'm going through all of those at the same time. I'm like, oh, man. Mm-hmm. I missed the last Olympics because I was injured. This is I'm the reigning world champion coming to this one. I'm favored to win. I'm like, oh, this is not good. But you know, again, you embrace what it is that's there. You live in the moment, and you know, we got through. The great RCMP came and escorted me to the track, and you know what happened after that.
Yes, sir.
I've seen a rule that sprinters live by the 85% rule, meaning you want to run 85% of your speed, because if you run 100%, you'll tense up. You won't be as fast. Is that what you did, or you? No, you've never heard of this.
I read it recently. Who said that to you?
No, I've read it. So no, you were all out. Like, again, put every ounce of what you had into that race, because the theory is that if you do that, you tense up a little bit and you won't maximize your speed. You didn't have that train of thought.
Okay. Ultimate speed, for all you out there, ultimate speed is the balance between 100% intensity and 100% relaxation.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
No,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and, no, but yeah.
And first of all, that's extremely difficult to do as a person.
Yes.
As a human being, right. Like your human body. Because coming out of the blocks, you have to understand how it is that you're going to get into your acceleration zone. Then when you hit top speed, you have to learn to relax, and you're breathing, and there's a guy at both of your shoulders, you know, like, you know, and there's fans, and there's people. Yeah. So all of those, yeah, it is 100% power, real power speed. You have to maximize 100% of power with relaxation, because that's why sometimes you see athletes and when they're tense,
yep,
you see them, their stride shortens.
Mm.
Right. So if you're tense, your stride shortens.
Right.
But if you relax too much, you can overstride.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying it's the balance.
So I'm half right. You're essentially half right.
I don't know where this 85% rule. I don't know where the 85% rule come from.
Yeah. Did some reading before you jumped in here, Donovan. How often do you replay that race in your head?
Oh man, you know what? I don't replay it now. But I obviously do a lot of media and appearances and stuff. So every time I see it, all I see is all the mistakes I made.
How many did you make?
Lots. I was you're talking about Atlanta, right?
So like, I was. Yeah, of course. You broke the world record, Donovan. You set the Olympic record. You broke the world record. You were the fastest man on the planet. And you're telling me I made so many mistakes.
Could
in
have
that
been
race.
Quicker, apparently.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Okay, so what number do you think you should have ran?
Okay, so what Dan thought I should have ran in Atlanta.
Okay.
If I started, like, I was the sixth guy out of the block. So I was by far the last guy. There was seven people in the race.
Yeah.
So I was second last out of the blocks.
Yep.
So my first 30 was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought I was going to run between 9:61 and 9:07. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
made up the gap, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know. Hey, you know, I think that you talk about relaxation. I could have panicked.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no chance, man. Again, I'm a one-shot guy, and when the lights are shining brightest, I'm going to show up.
I'm always fascinated because athletes will talk about like blacking out after big events.
Right.
Like you totally like, just no idea. Did right. that happen to you, or do you remember the end of the race vividly? Because there is that picture of you with just that. I don't even know what the emotion is on your face, but it is an iconic photo. Do you right. remember immediately after the race, or did you black out for a little while? How did that go?
Well, it's not blacking out. Let's get a lot. Yes. You know what? I think that when athletes, especially in individual competitions, when you're locked in the zone, like everything slows down.
Yeah.
So I know that you're watching a race that's 9.84 seconds. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, it's like a week.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know every single step I'm taking, every breath I take, you know, because you're trying, I'm trying to go like out of the blocks. Fundamentally and technically, your vertebrae should go 1 inch per stride, right? I mean, you start with a folded in the blocks. And essentially, you go 1 inch per stride
okay.
until you get to top speed. But when you get in the zone, it's quiet. Because for me, it is just an abstract painting. Like all of the people there, all the cameras, everything. And everything stops. I don't see it. I don't, you know, there's no one waving, nothing. Mm. Complete focus.
When does time get back to normal for you? Is that an hour after the race? Is it right after the race? Like how
immediately does that... hitting the line. And that's what it was. You're asking me about that. You asked me about the face immediately. And funny enough, I'll confess. So I knew that had a big clause in all of my contracts if I ran 9.8. So I didn't even care about the world record. So I turned, I'm like, 9.8. Yes! Right? Yes. Because, I mean, we had targeted breaking the world record in 97, which would have been the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was so the face was oh yeah, I got it. Like I mean, winning. Funny enough, I expected to win. Like there was nothing, you know, that was going to take that away from me in my mind and my preparation, obviously with Dr. Lindsay and Dan, and also training squads, training partners. But yeah, after I crossed the line, it's almost like, so imagine this. I guess your question was. In the 100 meters, so I'm in the zone for the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
So like the volume is on mute and everything slows down. And as soon as you pass the line, it cranks up. But it cranks up to like, you know, like decibels.
13, right. Way over.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yes.
Did you hear the noise around Michael Johnson during your races? How Bob Costas was like, oh, he's the fastest man, and if you divide his 200 meter into, how nonsense was that to you? Did that even bother you? Was that on your radar during those games?
No. It didn't bother me, like, because there was no talk of it in Atlanta. I mean, Bob, and by the way, Bob, I love Bob.
I think legendary
Bob,
broadcaster.
I think that Bob
right.
is one of the greatest broadcasters ever, and yep. I'm sure Bob's like, "Oh man, let's not talk about that." Again. Right? So it's kind of silly how it was portrayed, right? Because Michael ran 1932, so they divided the 100 meters in two,
right?
And apparently 9.6, you know, that's what he ran.
Sure,
but I'd already beaten Michael, like not beaten Michael, demoralized them in the 100 meters.
Yep.
So, I mean, I knew how it works. And also, in the 200 meters, that's not how it works. You run the corner, and then you run like a fly 100 meters. So you're standing up. So here's how the math works for me. If I'm running 9.8 in 100 meters, right? And then my leg for the relay was 8.6, I think.
Mm-hmm.
My math in the 200 then would have been under 19 seconds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
So I'm saying to you, I'm just saying how it was broadcast, it didn't make any sense at all because you kind of go, oh, yeah, cool, no problem. You divide the 200 meters, no problem. Now you add the 100 meter that I did in the real 100 meter test of speed and then on the relay. Just mm-hmm. please. Add those times together and see what number you get.
Yeah, well, obviously you won the gold in the 4x100 yes, meter relay as well.
Yeah, yes.
Do you regret putting up your finger?
No, absolutely not. You know, I'm just saying to you that, again, I just said what time I ran.
Yeah.
Right? So I still ran the fastest leg ever. And I think that I think one of the things that we were quite focused on was getting the Olympic gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Bruni, Glenroy, Robert, and Carlton You know, first of all, there's only one 100 meter gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one world's fastest man. There's only one world record holder. That was all me, right? Yep. And so what I want to do is to make sure that those guys, we're going to do something that's never been done in history before, because I think that what is not spoken about often and often enough, since 1896, we're the first team ever to beat the U.S.
Yeah.
Ever. And we did it in their house. Mm-hmm. We did it in Atlanta. There's no regrets with me putting my hand up, because I don't know what difference that would have made. And also, if you watch the race, momentum, you know, I was going so fast that momentum carried me through to one of the fastest legs ever to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you still keep in contact with the guys from that race?
Are you talking about the guys that my teammates or,
yeah,
or the,
your
or,
teammates?
Oh yeah, my teammates. Yeah. We're on a WhatsApp chat.
Yeah, I bet.
Today.
Yeah.
We spoke. Well, I sent Glenroy a note a couple of days ago, because Glenroy is the head coach now of our Olympic team, and they had a camp in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is where Glenroy and I trained.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
And yeah, they, you know, we have a new Canada's fastest woman, Canadian record holder now, Audrey Leduc. And we got some young kids that are, I mean, I'm always going to be supporting these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we had, I talked to Glenroy, Robert, Carlton, I talked all the time. Bruni, I see sometimes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Donovan, we know during the NFL draft, a lot of people talk about 40s.
Right.
Did you ever run a 40
in
your prime?
I did.
Do you remember what you ran?
378.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
But, you know, 378.
Yes. I ran 378 as they timed us then. I mean, I think that's what sometimes people don't get. They're like, 378, that's impossible. I'm like, no. It was hand time or beams when I was competing. So I was doing repeat 40s, and I'd run between 378 and 381. Yeah. I mean, but that's also standard, by the way. That is standard for some of the fastest guys in the world today.
Yeah.
I'm very certain that. Like, Kristen Coleman's a world indoor champion. He's a 3.736 guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just saying to you, it's also a different speed. When you watch, like, again, I'm a huge fan of sport.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch football players run, they're not necessarily running with their bodies poised to capitalize or maximize their speed going forward. Sort of like hockey.
Sure,
because you're running like almost sideways, because you might have to stop, shift, turn, and go
avoid a hit. Yeah,
in 100 meters
straight line,
there's nothing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, right? Yeah, that's laser, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. And when you learn and master that, speed looks different, efficiency look different. But yeah, the Usain Bolt ran 4.2. With his, you know, I think he had a pair of, we had dress pants on. He was, he was just hanging out with those guys. I think he was just hanging out at the combine, going, okay, yeah, I'll go do it.
Yeah, no problem.
And this is years after he retired.
In dress shoes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did a phenomenal job for the CBC being an analyst trackside, watching Usain Bolt break all those records.
Thank you.
How in awe were you of him too? Just knowing, being in that like elite club of being the fastest man in the world. When you saw him at his size, what he was doing, clean like you were,
yeah, right.
Like how awe-inspiring was that?
Oh, you know what? I'm a fan of sport, and I'm always mesmerized by people at the top level. I mentioned Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Michael Phelps.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Watching Usain. I mean, he broke my record in 2008 when I was in the stadium. And you know, There are times that people hold on to things.
Sure.
I was never that guy. You know, whatever records I have, go get it.
Mm-hmm.
But to sit and watch a human being do something that I did professionally, but do it so much better and so much faster was phenomenal. I mean, and so, you know, when I saw him after he ran, I took the proverbial crown off my head and put him on his head. I mean, first of all, one of the greatest ambassadors for our sport or sport period.
No question.
Really good guy. And man, I mean, he rewrote record books. I mean, I don't know who's going to be. I mean, I think that, you know, I was world record holder, Olympic champion, world champion. so is Usain. The next man to have all three titles, I want to see what that looks like.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to see who's going to run faster than 9.58 and be the Olympic champion and be the world champion. I want to see what that, I mean, I'm a very optimistic guy. I don't think that I'm going to see it in my lifetime. But then again, I didn't think I was going to see 9.58 in my lifetime.
Well, I was about to ask you, my buddies and I over beers, Donovan, right. Like, how fast can a human being actually run? What is the limit? Because Usain's the fastest human being we've ever seen.
Right. Ever.
Like, right. What is the limit? Like, with all the sports science and the training and the nutrition and the, like, how fast, like, when does it actually just top out where, you know what, can anybody run 9.4, you think? Like, is that even possible? 9.3? Like, are these numbers even possible for a human being to run that fast?
Well again, we can go back to the fact that no one thought that 9.5 was possible.
Right.
And we witnessed it.
Yep.
And as kids and people become bigger, stronger, and faster, we know there's going to be another phenomenal human being at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what's happening with especially with track and field right now, is that they've got these super shoes. So you've got these incredible super shoes that actually bounce. I mean, I was running basically with a plastic shoe with some nails in it.
Sure.
Right? So I got no bounce whatsoever. Every single thing that I put in the track was my body. Now you have, a lot of these kids are not, and this is according to Dan, by the way, this is not me. Dan said a lot of these guys today are not running that fast because of the technology in the track itself, the rubber.
Really?
Yes. And because of the titanium plate on the spike itself. Because basically, as soon as you hit the ground, it bounces you. Right? So yeah, so to your question, I don't know what the human limit are. I'm gonna continue watching. I'll be on CBC
Looking forward to it.
In a couple of months, watching and talking about what these new versions of athletes are doing in 2024 in Paris. The short answer to your question is I do not know what the human potential is, but there's always going to be people that are going to sit and push their limits and see what they can do.
I know you have to run, but I just have to ask you, what do we expect from the defending 200-meter Olympic champion, Andre de Grasse, here in the 100 and the 200? What are you expecting out of him in Paris?
Listen, I'm hoping that he's injury-free. That's the number one thing. Number two, I'm hoping that he gives himself a chance. The 100 meters is going to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
Right? The 200 meters is also going to be pretty tough. But if there's one person that I have uber confidence in that they're going to show up when the lights are shining brightest, it's Andre. And also, on top of that, I think that we have about six guys now in our relay pool.
Mm.
And I think that our relay will be on the podium, if not win. I mean, I'm confident that we're going to do something.
Right.
But Andre, Aaron, both of those guys should be in the finals, give themselves an opportunity. And, you know, if they're injury free, and give them some a shot, it will all be good. But either way, man, let's watch them and cheer them on.
Should be a lot of fun. Olympic gold medalist Donovan Bailey, he's at the Hyatt Regency Calgary today in support of the Classroom Champions with over 55 tables of guests. Yeah,
of course.
It brings together over 450 Calgary business leaders, Olympians and Paralympians, and community leaders to support the work of Classroom Champions, a nonprofit dedicated to providing specialized programming for high-need schools across Western Canada and North America by partnering students with classrooms with athlete mentors. Donovan, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for jumping in.
Dude, thank you for having me, man. This has been awesome.
Mucho Big Show with GVP next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.